Welcome to Bottomless Broadway, where we talk musicals over mimosas. Do I say anything after this?
Oh, do we say our names?
Oh, we used to. Not this season, though. I feel like there's something else. I'm usually like, as usual, we're going through the new musicals of the 2023 season. I'm Cindy, and I'm here with Christine. And then you're usually like, hi.
Thank you for reenacting that.
Because I'm always like, sometimes I'm like, I shouldn't introduce Christine for her. So I should just be like, I'm Cindy.
And I'm Christine.
Yeah, I'm like, she can't read my mind. She doesn't know to immediately be like, and this is Christine. And I'm like, no, I'll just say your name. It's fine. That inner monologue plays in my head every time. It's fine. Intro over. And today we're talking about Some Like It Hot.
Do you have five words? Because I have five words.
I have five words. My five words are musicals can just be fun.
I would agree with those.
I was shocked by the people that gave it both the positive and the negative reviews because it was such like a middle of the road show for me. But I think like we had a lot of fun there. And it's not at all a tight show, in my opinion. Like, there aren't a ton of ballads. A lot of it is, like, fun duets and ensemble numbers. And honestly, there are these, like, jazzy numbers that all blend into each other. And I'm sure, like, half of them could be cut out and replaced with, like, one line of dialogue each. Because they all blend into each other so much. And, like, a lot of the songs are literally about, like, one funny thing that happens, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so for that reason, like, it kind of goes on for a while. The songs aren't very distinguishable. It's just, it's not very efficient and perfect in any way. But I totally enjoyed it. Like, again, I have trouble remembering it. But I think, like, ultimately that's okay. Because hopefully people aren't expecting for some extremely incredible highbrow entertainment. And if you know what you're, like, getting yourself into, it's, like, 2.5 hours of good entertainment.
Yeah. I mean, my five words are great show, but not memorable. Because just between us two over the past week, we spent so much time going back and forth being like, wait, so how did this happen? And, like, how did we get to this song? And, I mean, to be fair, we also saw it in November. And the cast album really doesn't help you out there. The songs aren't that plot-driven. They all kind of sound like Let's Be Bad. Yeah, like you said, I think it does have the vibe of like a big, splashy, traditional Broadway show, like you're like 42nd Street or something with a lot of big dance numbers and big sets. Like I thought the sets were not that like cool, but they were definitely, they looked expensive and they looked colorful, you know? It's pure entertainment and then you don't have to remember it afterwards, as we did not. So we will endeavor to do that for this podcast, though.
Yeah, I'm really curious, like, what the producers and writers and everyone were thinking and, like, hoping to get out of this show. Because, like, in my reading articles online and stuff and trying to remember every detail of what happens in the show, I just saw, like, how much the story has been changed compared to the movie. Mm-hmm. And how it's, yeah, like, so much more woke. Which, I don't know. After comparing them, it's
more woke. The movie was more progressive than I was expecting.
Especially for the 50s, right?
Yeah.
I just don't know if, like, the producers and writers were hoping to make a big statement with this show. Because I feel like if that's what they wanted to do, they failed.
I definitely think they had a big thing with gender identity, which you can see, but it didn't feel like that was the point of the show. It felt like that was a thing that the show was also doing and, you know, a great chance to highlight non-binary people. Like, it gives you, I guess, a little bit of something to walk away with.
I was shocked to see Matthew Lopez attached to it. And I don't know. I guess I would have just, like, assumed that they were trying to make more of a statement.
Do you want to go through a summary first so then we could actually talk more about who the characters are and stuff.
All right. So we got Joe and Jerry. They are like best friends since childhood. They grew up together. They're jazz musicians, I believe. Joe is played by Christian Borle. And then Jerry is played by J. Harrison Gee. This is like during the Prohibition, towards the end of Prohibition. They are both playing instruments at a speakeasy. Somebody rats out to the police about this speakeasy. So the mob guy that owns the speakeasy shoots the person that ratted him out. But Joe and Jerry like witness this because I think they're literally on their way to the mob guy's office to like ask for a raise or something, like something super chill. And then they just like witness three guys get shot dead. So they run out of there. And of course, the mob guy, his name is like Spats, right?
Yep.
He is chasing them because he doesn't want Spats Columbo, because he doesn't want anyone to be, you know, a living witness. So Joe and Jerry freaking out. They don't know what to do, and they decide to run away to California. And they happen to have like come across an advertisement for this all-female band called the Society of Syncopators.
I think they actually run into the band. Like, they didn't really plan to go to California. They were just trying to get out. So I think they run into the band first, and the band happened to be going to California.
And they find out that the band needs a sax player and a harp player?
Upright bass.
Jerry's a bass player, but I thought they needed something else.
They like stole the instruments from the people who like were supposed to be part of the band and like chucked them in the river or something. And that's why they're like, oh, what are the odds that we just happen to have the right instruments you're missing?
So yeah, they dress up as women. They try to go join this all-female band, and they decide to go by Josephine and Daphne. But at first, they decide to go with Josephine and Geraldine because it's Joe and Jerry. This part is like so funny to me because it just sounds exactly like the kind of women names that a guy would come up with. It's like the grandparents' names in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. They're like, ah, yes, Joe and Josephine. So right as they're like introducing themselves to the band, Jerry suddenly decides to go by like Daphne, totally off book. He seems happy about it. All good. They hop on this train. They're stopping at different cities between Chicago and California to, you know, perform. So during this time, they're bonding with the band. Like all the girls seem to like them and they're like getting along fine. But the lead singer of the band is this girl named Sugarcane, played by Adriana Hicks of Catherine of Aragon fame. She's super pretty. She's originally in the movie played by Marilyn Monroe, and her character is very different now. Joe is like obsessed with her because she's super hot. So by the time they finally get to California at the Hotel de Coronado, which this was so exciting because I've been there so many times. And yeah, anyways, by the time they actually get there, like Joe and Jerry have bonded with the band, but they need to go run to Mexico and just, you know, leave the country to flee Spats Columbo. A lot of crazy things kind of stem from that because they need to run away, but Joe is in love or in lust with Sugar. And then the owner of Hotel de Coronado is this dude named Osgood Fielding, who kind of like gets thrown into the mix weirdly because he has this whole female band staying in his hotel, but the one that he decides to go after is Daphne.
It's a very like shenanigans show. So yeah. I also don't really think there are spoilers for this because it's just whatever shenanigans they keep getting into, and it's just a series of different events that throw kind of a wrench in their plans. And none of them, yeah, I'd say, are like super big plot twists or anything.
It felt very low stakes. And I feel like that sounds like bad, but I was fine with it. It wasn't a show where I wanted to be on the edge of my seat for.
It's not a show where you really think about what the characters are feeling. And they do try to do that a little with Sugar, which I honestly don't think works that much. We talked about how Sugar is very different from the Marilyn Monroe portrayal. So my understanding is that Marilyn is a very ditzy blonde who just doesn't have much luck in love and is a little dumb, you know. And that is definitely not what Sugar is here. She is much more assertive. She has dreams. She has goals. She just also happens to have a bad string of luck with her men. She keeps going after sax players. I don't know why. Yeah, so she is a lot more driven here and she wants to be an actress, and she has a whole song about that. I guess we can also talk more about her songs once we get into the score.
opening number is called What Are You Thirsty For? What's this lady Sue's name? She has like a prefix.
Oh, Sweet Sue.
Sweet Sue. I was going to say like Old Sue, and I was like, that sounds terrible. Sweet Sue. She is kind of like the person that runs the women's band. So she starts us off.
I actually thought this was kind of smart because she sets up the fact that we're in the Prohibition. That's what Are You Thirsty For is mentioning. This is just the secret jazz club where we can have fun. And I thought that was just a good opening to the show. It was a fun introduction to the band, to Sweet Sue. Oh yeah, doesn't their club also get raided at the end of this or something?
Is it the same club?
Possibly.
I completely agree. Like, it is a very effective opening number. I was going to say the same thing. Like, it just does a good job setting up. It tells you where you are, when it is, who you're dealing with. And then it ultimately is like kind of a bop too, because it's like about drinking at a speakeasy. And she has a beautiful voice and it's very like jazzy. And it's a strong way to start the show.
Yeah. I think the cast album is really fun to listen to. I don't normally really like jazz music, but this sort of like big band style is probably the type I like best. I think it's just more vibrant and interesting to me. And so a lot of the songs are in this style, like all the songs that the Society Syncopators play are in this style. So they all do sort of blend into each other, but I do also just enjoy listening to it in the background because they're just fun.
What they lack in terms of like saying anything super profound or like plot driving, it just like makes up for in the instrumentals and the general fun vibe.
Yeah. I think the songs are kind of written more to be staged rather than written to be heard or sung, because the staging is pretty wild. Like every song is pretty much a dance number, and I think half the songs are probably tap dance songs. And I mean, Casey Nicholaw is the director choreographer, so he's kind of known for that, but not to this extent, I don't think. And then we get to You Can't Have Me If You Don't Have Him, which Joe and Jerry were auditioning for Spats. Also, for people who don't know, Jay Harrison G is black, and Spats was like, I'll take Joe because he's white, but like, we don't deal with colored people here, or something like that. And they have this whole sort of duo tap number where they talk about how they're basically brothers. They grew up together. I did like this a lot when we saw the show. Like, this really, I thought, was cute. Also, it's just fun to just see them tap together, and they have great chemistry. And it was just a fun number. I thought it was cute.
So this song title is You Can't Have Me, parentheses, If You Don't Have Him, right? Mm-hmm. The song is like the nice version, like the super kind, loving version of You and Me, but mostly me.
Yeah, he's the bait and I'm the hook. I'm the goose and he's the cook. He's the beans and he's the gas. I'm the ball and I'm the brass. You can't break up a winning team.
Like that crutch and Tiny Tim.
And say you can't have all without the shoe. And you can't have me if you don't have him.
All when we play, it's just a fact, hot music fills the air.
It's true that opposites attract, and so we make a perfect pair.
Cause I'm the third and he's the root, that's the place all chords begin.
I think Vamp is actually really fun. After they see the people get shot and they're trying to escape because Spats is after them, and this is when Joe sees, I guess, a bunch of wigs around, and he's like, we could do something with this. And he's like, it's like jazz, you just gotta vamp and figure out what's coming next and like improvise and stuff. And Jerry's like, you're insane. But he has no better ideas, so he just goes along with it. I think it's fun. It's also just classic jazz, I guess. It kind of sounds like Sing Sing Sing, or at least portions of it. I don't think it's that big of a song to listen to on its own or anything, but it's one of those sort of a chase song in the show. There's a lot of just quick running back and forth and like coming up with a plan. I definitely think You Can't Have Me If You Don't Have Him stands out to me more, because that's more like a character song. You actually learn a little about the characters. Vamp is just like a we're fucked, what are we doing next kind of song.
In the show, they cover two like very distinct scenes, but I think just on the cast album, sonically, it's not terribly different. It's the same two people singing. It's like one after the other. So they just, it's kind of like one long song for me when I listen to it. And I think like over the course of these two songs, you realize as the audience that like Jerry is the sane one. Like,
right.
You know, Joe just has all that white entitlement. So he just does whatever the fuck he wants and comes up with terrible schemes. He's a wild spirit. And Jerry's more the one that's like, no, Joe, it's fine. Let's just leave. Like, it's going to be fine. Let's not do anything borderline insane. But he goes along with the dressing up as a woman plan because, like you
Jerry
said,
Jerry is a good friend.
He has no other
plans. And also he's fucked. And,
yeah, he has no other plans. So then we're back with Sweet Sue, a lot of our cast from California Bound.
I think this song is actually a little bit of a standout to me because this is actually a song that moves through story. Sue announces to her band that they're doing a whole tour to like end in Coronado in San Diego. And Joe and Jerry hear this and they're like, hey, we can play instruments. They also are low-key grifters or something. I think they're like low-key criminals in other senses, but you know, they're trying to be slightly more legit. I think this is where they steal the instruments of the girls who are supposed to go on this and they just toss them in the river. And then they loudly proclaim, we need to check in a sax and an upright bass. And Sue is like, oh, where do you happen to be going with that? And they're like, we're going to the Sheboygan Music Conservatory. Sue is like, what if I pay you instead and you come and play with my band? And they're like, yes, because that is exactly what Joe was going for. But then Joe keeps eyeing up the other girls because he's a little bit of a man whore. And like Jerry has to be like, hey, just remember, you're a girl. Also, it should be noted, Jay Harrison D is like really tall. Like, towers over the rest of the cast, kind of. And then, but looks really good. I mean, he started out as a drag queen, I think, in actual life. And so, like, his costume actually works really well for him. But Joe, like, Christian Borle, I think they purposely made his costume look weird. Like, it's a little bit of, like, a meta thing, I think, because no one really comments on it that hard, except they keep calling him old, which is also really funny. But his wig obviously looks like doesn't really fit well, and his voice is like no one would really accept that as his regular voice. It sounds really fake, and I feel like they kind of did that on purpose just to show that he is not like comfortable in the skin of a woman, and that's not who he really is, which I think is an interesting choice and, like, for the most part, works fairly well.
Yeah. And then this whole song kind of leads up to the grand debut of Sugar, who is the only one who isn't at the train station. Even after Joe and Jerry got fucking hired at the train station, Sugarcane's missing. She's the star of the show. Sweet Sue's really mad. She's like, I told her no booze. I told her no men. And then Sugar waltzes on stage, debuts with like a pretty funny line because she's like, oh, like, don't be so hard on me, Sue. This is the earliest I've ever been late. And then she has like a cute little couplet or something about how she's like saying goodbye to all the men of Chicago. So you know that she's a woman whore and she's perfect for Joe.
I feel naked like everybody staring at me.
We're California bound.
No one's staring at you, but I like what I see.
We're California bound.
Take a look at these dames. Everyone is a pearl. Do you think if I asked nicely, one would give me a whirl?
Man, you best just keep repeating, I'm a girl, I'm a girl.
We're California bound.
The scene between this song and the next where Sugar tells Joe about how she always dates sax players.
So I think, because she's sneaking booze, even though she's not supposed to, but she definitely is just hiding in the freight car or something and just drinking. And then Joe finds her and joins her. And they sort of bond, but she sees Josephine as more of maybe like a grandmother figure. Like a, yeah.
Christian Borle looks so old. I don't know what it is about middle-aged men who put on a wig and they immediately look like an 80-year-old woman. This is like the third season we've had recently with cross-dressing, because we had Tootsie and we had Miss Doubtfire, and like both of those got a little bit of backlash, but it's like, okay, I guess we're doing it again, and it is kind of like done better every year, but they all look so old.
Yeah, I mean, Mrs. Doubtfire was literally supposed to be a grandma, and then
but he didn't have to try very hard.
And Tootsie Ron McClure was also kind of old.
Yeah, and Santino, he's a cute man, but he's still, I mean, he was playing Juliet's nurse.
Yeah.
And she's old, I'm pretty sure.
So Sugarcane knows that Josephine plays the sax. They're kind of just like having a fun little conversation where she's like, oh, like I'm swearing off men who play the sax because like I've dated all of them and they all have broken my heart. Like a man with a sax can't be trusted. And I feel like Joe and his Josephine get up is like both excited and dismayed. He's like, oh man, I'm a man sax player. But then I feel like the other part of him is like, that's right, we are all players and I'm gonna make this work. Like a fun little setup for his character before the next depressing ballad.
Yeah, I mean, so the way that the song works, it's one of those songs where it starts where she's singing to Josephine, and then the set changes so that you see her actually sort of performing this song as a concert in one of their stops. And it works both ways, where it's very bluesy, like Billie Holiday, and you could see it as like a solo, almost like a torch song, but it also mm-hmm. is what she's actually thinking. There's a little bit of that like vague delineation there. So I think that works well. I just don't really care about this song.
I agree. Sugarcane has quite a couple of solos, and I really only like one of them.
I do think Adriana Hicks has a really interesting voice, because, you know, in Six, it's like she sings the Beyonce song and it's like, okay, she does have an amazing voice. She can obviously belt and stuff. But I feel like this style of music just really brings out a different sound in her voice. I appreciated a lot on the group numbers. Actually, the next number, I think, is like she just sounds so good on the group numbers.
This song itself is like so much more interesting than the title. And the song's not that interesting. But the title's really boring. She like talks about how all these different instruments makes her feel. Some instruments like a piano or a bass or whatever, like feels romantic and calming and different things. And then she's like, but a saxophone. And she just like keeps coming back to it, which is kind of a fun concept. Ultimately, not a great song, but A Darker Shade of Blue is a shitty name.
This was, I think, the first song they put out.
They really should have went for At the Old Majestic Nickel Matinee.
It's also because that's the only song that really gives you insight into her character. Like, kind of like how You Can't Have Me If You Don't Have Him sort of sets up the backstories of Joe and Jerry.
Maybe it's like in the original movie, like Sugar, you know, didn't have as many like passions and like other defining characteristics. Like Marilyn Monroe literally like says a line that's like, I'm just a dumb girl. Maybe like in the movie, her falling for sax players and then getting dumped by sax players is like a important characteristic. But I feel like in this musical, it's just not. Like she kind of like mentions it in one scene and then in this song, but ultimately like it doesn't really matter, and it doesn't like shape her character very much, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the her wanting to be an actress is new for this show, which is nice because it gives her something to aspire to and like, you know, have goals outside of finding a man that's not a sax player, I guess.
Yeah.
But
well, we just have two songs before we get there.
Yeah.
So Take It a Step Up. I actually don't know what this is.
This is their travel song. This is the travel montage.
Okay. Cool.
And they just notable? Do that sort of cheesy thing where they yell out the names of different cities as they're like Des Moines, Omaha. They're hitting, you know, all the fun cities, Wichita, and the Midwest montage. They're like, we can skip this part. Like, you get this in one song and we got to move on.
When we were all just little girls and music called a name, we sat alone just fingering our scales. You can take a shortcut on the rocky road to fame. Your I'm sure must come of age before you step onto the stage. So when we hit the bandstand for the time to sing for sale, we all were pros because we did the prep. Because when the rhythm starts calling, and this time for you too, well, yeah, ladies, wake it up and make it up and take it up a step.
And then we get to Z-Bap, which is a pretty fun song.
I think this is a highlight for me.
Yeah. So the setup, I believe, is, like I said, like while they're on their way to San Diego, they are still playing at clubs on the way. And I believe they're somewhere where like the club owner tries to shortchange them because the Sweet Sue is also black. And obviously Sugar is black in this show. So there's just like both some sexism and racism going on, I believe. But like the club owner is just like, I'm not going to pay you what I told you I was going to pay you because I don't think you guys deserve it. And Sweet Sue's like really mad. And I believe Jerry/Daphne steps in and helps, like they kind of handle it together.
I totally thought this was Sue being a badass moment.
No, because he has this line, I feel like, that's like, last time, like, I fucked up a guy, he was twice your size. And it's like, we know he's a man, but no one else knows he's a man now.
Right.
So yeah, it's like kind of a funny line. And then they basically have this whole, I don't know, it's like another tap number, right? And they have this whole like Z-Bap, Z-Doodly-Wop, Z-Bam-Bam or something. I don't know what it is. I don't know what the mumble is, but they're
it's
just,
all just
like, yeah,
scatting.
Someone, yeah. If like, if someone wrongs you, just say this at them. And it doesn't make a lot of sense. It's kind of like Zazz from The Prom.
I was going to say it's super califragilistic expialidocious. Also, speaking of Zazz, Angie Shore is in this. She has what I would generously call a featured ensemble role where she maybe sings a couple lines solo, but doesn't really do that much. She's kind of like Sue's right-hand woman. She's back to being a chorus girl, essentially. So,
oh, yeah. We did make that joke. So yeah, they sing this song that's basically like, whenever a man treats you wrong and they come up with all these funny situations, just say this Z-Bap, blah, 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 blah. Bam bam. and that is the answer. It's like the biggest ensemble number so far, so I thought it was very fun. Like, definitely, yeah. Staged, it was a great time. And I think it kind of leads well into the next song, which is the Sugar Cane solo that we were talking about earlier, because like you were saying, she wants to be an actress. She wants to be a movie star. It's called the At the Old Majestic Nickel Matinee because she talks about like the days of the past where she saw a lot of movies and how much that meant to her and how she could see herself on the screen. But there are a lot of parts of the song that are kind of alluding to how like she doesn't feel like this dream is possible because she's black and all of the leads that she's seeing in these movies are white, and that even at the movie theater she has to sit like in the balcony because she can't sit at the orchestra level or whatever. And there's like fun lines about that because she's kind of like, well, the balcony is technically like above the orchestra and those people are below me and I would rather be above them anyway, which is like fun. But yeah, like I think Z-Bap leads into this well because it's like they kind of almost get shortchanged because they're women and half of them are black. Then like Sugar Cane sings this song about like the same struggles.
Yeah, so to be honest, I also don't really care about this song, but I do think
it's
out
my
of
favorite
Sugar
solos, Cane solo.
Yeah, like out of the
By
Sugar
far.
Solos, it's the best one. I like the big band numbers because they're fun, they're very dancey, they're fun to watch on stage, they're fun to listen to, but the ballads are just very okay. They're just there because they needed variety.
I mean, I like how dreamy this one is. It kind of sounds like a ballad from like a golden age musical. It's kind of important because she's confessing all of this to Josephine.
Right.
And slash Joe. And she's just like, yeah, like, and apparently whenever they stop at any of the towns that they've stopped at to perform on their way to San Diego, she's always like, MIA. And she's like, oh, I'm at the movies. And Joe's like, by yourself? Like, that's kind of weird. Are you a loner? And she's just like, no, the movies are amazing. And they kind of like bond over this. And of course, Joe's like, you're already a star, sugar.
I think it does have good lines. Like she says, but those like me could only use the balcony like the movies. Life could be that black and white. I thought that was great. And like what you said about I'd rather be above them. So I think it has some good lines. The song doesn't like it's not one that I'm going to return to. Not that like any of them are really songs that I would return to that much, but this is probably in the bottom third of my list.
This is definitely in the top third for me. None of her other ballads make it, but like so many of the fun production numbers sound the same that I feel like I could just like pick two and that would cover all of them. So this one, like in terms of it being more like memorable because it's distinct from the rest of the album, I'm like kind of excited for it. I think you generally don't love like super straightforward ballads across most shows. You judge ballads a lot harder than like fun production
I do
numbers.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah, so I think it's fine. I do like the production numbers when I'm watching it, but listening to them one after the other, yeah, on the cast album is not as exciting for me.
That's fair.
Up there on the screen, there was the romance, and the make-believe would carry me away, because no one I had ever seen were like the stars upon the screen at the old majestic nickel matinee. In those movies I saw, things looked different. Someone else's world was up there on display. For not one vamp or Wall Street wife held up a mirror to my life at the old majestic nickel matinee.
How did you feel about Poor Little Millionaire? This is them arriving at the Hotel Del Coronado and us meeting Osgood for the first time.
You know, I think I like it because I just like Osgood. I don't know. Like, on one hand, it's like if you think about what he's saying and how, like, people would treat a character like that today, he just is so entitled because mm-hmm. he is literally a millionaire. And he's like, I know I have all the money, but I have nothing because I don't have someone I love. And it's just like kind of like, bleh. But he's just so adorable. Like, the actor is this short little man who just like waltzes in his white pants all happy.
I was not sold by him by this song. I was like,
you thought he was like a scam?
Well, not even that. I just didn't care about him. It's a very love at first sight thing when he sees Daphne, because he literally is just like talking about how he's a poor little millionaire. And all of a sudden he's like, oh my God, that's the one that I want. And it was just like too sudden for me, I think, because, you know, you can tell that they're really building up the Joe Sugar romance. They have like, and this just almost felt out of place with how quickly he was just like, yep, that's the one.
I did
really like him in the second act. So he won me over later.
I feel like the fact that Sugar is there and she's supposed to be like this really hot black woman, and he like sees the whole band, but then like goes for Daphne is like immediately intriguing. And I also think that like it's a little bit ambiguous in the musical, at least, as to whether or not he already knows that Daphne's a man, or like kind mm-hmm. of senses it, or is attracted to like the masculine edge of Daphne, kind of.
Right.
So I feel like that's kind of part of it.
But yeah, I end up liking Osgood a lot. I don't really remember how much I'm thinking about him at this point, to be honest.
Yeah.
But I think I was excited for new characters now that they've like landed.
Right. Also, this was just a fun number because there's a new set since they're in the hotel. They have all these ensemble guys dressed up as bellhops, and they have like some wild, I think it was like leaps into lunges or something as part of the choreography that was just very satisfying to watch for some reason. And it's just all the bellhops are like, I think, tossing suitcases and stuff also. I don't know. Again, big dance show. So,
yeah.
And he has some fun lines too, where he's like, I pay my taxes, I got no debt, I'm just a little pot of gold, so I keep casting out my fishing net, but the only thing I catch is a cold. Like, wow, okay, poor dude. So, you know, like, he is, you know, likable. It was just the love story I needed a tiny bit more.
Yeah. You know what I was just thinking also is, like, I feel like I'm usually not like the biggest fan of big dance shows because a lot of them end up like lacking in other departments. And yeah. I'm not as here for the dance as like other stuff. But like this show remains fun. And I feel like all of the crazy dancing is like built into the story. Next song's our act one finale.
Yep.
Cool. So that's the title song. Some Like It Hot. I don't actually know what triggers this.
It's just another, like, I think it's their first performance because they have like a semi-residency in the hotel or something. And It's, I think it's just their first performance in the hotel. And they got to just have a big number to end on. It was weird because when watching the show, I definitely pinpointed this as like the main song that they would, that's like the most memorable that they would try to promote, which they have. But compared to something like I'm California Bound or even Z-Bop, like I just don't care about this song as much listening to it on the cast album now.
I agree so hard. And I saw a lot of reviews being like, oh, like the music isn't amazing. There's not a lot of standouts, but the title song is amazing. And I'm like, was it? That is like one of the last things I think about.
It's just a very like mid-tier song overall. Again, I also do like Adriana Hicks's vocals on this a lot. I don't know. There's something about the way her voice sounds on this cast recording that I'm just obsessed with.
Mm-hmm. Now on a sultry summer day, some consummate with consomme. Yes, as a rule, it keeps things cool as mountain air. And though the postman might ring twice, some like the man who brings the ice. He cometh with his block to stock my frigidaire. To warm the cockles of their heart, some like a fresh young apple tart, but in a storm, just being warm will never do. But if you've a yen for egg foo young, mine's guaranteed to burn your tongue. Some like it hot and hot is what I got for you.
Act two. At some point, all the girls in the band are like, oh my god, let's go to Mexico. It'll be fun. And Osgood, of course, is like trying to ingratiate himself with Daphne. And then you find out he's like half Mexican. He's like, yeah, so let's go. Like, I got a place we can go. And they're like, oh my god, like girls' night out, whatever. At some point, he also mentions he has a boat. So I think around here is when Joe is like, I'm going to break into the boat. And he convinces Daphne to go with Osgood to Mexico. To like distract him?
Yeah, I think Joe is just like, Daphne, please keep Osgood in Mexico all night so I can go on his yacht. And Daphne's like, I don't like this plan, but goes along with it anyway.
Well, because he wants to go on the yacht so he can seduce Sugar as Joe, because he knows that Josephine, well, I think as he like man. Originally planned to be as Joe, but then so there's this dude Kip that shows up at some point, and he's like an investor, or he's like a screenwriter.
Oh, he's
right?
A screenwriter in the hotel. Yeah. He's like played by a random white dude.
He becomes Kip, who is also, by the way, German.
German screenwriter. And I mean, it's perfect because, you know, he just talked to Sugar about how she wants to be an actress. He's like, I'm a screenwriter. So Sugar's like immediately in.
I don't remember why he decides to become Kip, because I feel like his plan was to introduce her to Joe so he could, like, you know, have a real relationship with her.
What happens in the movie is Marilyn Monroe is like, I just want to meet a millionaire. And then Joe, maybe he's like threatened by Oscar or something, I don't know, but he basically impersonates a millionaire and names himself Junior. So I feel like maybe in this show, because Sugar doesn't want to meet a millionaire, she wants to like make it in Hollywood, he just like picks whatever gives him the best chances with her. Because that's what happens in the movie. Also in the movie, like, Joe is much more of an asshole, and I don't really know how he gets redeemed. But I copied down this line. It's either from a review or from literally the Wikipedia page. I don't remember. But it's, once on the yacht, Junior tells Sugar that psychological trauma has left him impotent and frigid, but that he would marry anyone who could cure him. Sugar tries to rouse him with considerable success.
Oh my God. So,
he wasn't thinking long term, clearly. Yeah. Okay, also just to put this into the context of songs, I think Let's Be Bad is basically Osgood Fielding being like, let's go to Mexico. And this is the song and scenes where Daphne leaves, Joe, Josephine stays behind. And then when Joe invites, or Kip, Joe/Kip, so many names now, invites Sugar onto his quote-unquote yacht, they sing Dance the World Away, which, like, Sugar is immediately a hoe for a screenwriter. She is like, yes, he can make me an actress. I'm going in. Like, she's so gung-ho for him. And Christian Borle is just not hot enough to make it believable that she's not a gold digger, but it's fine.
Yeah, so Let's Be Bad is the song from Smash. They did change lyrics. I remember feeling like it was a lot more exciting in Smash when we watched it, but listening to it now, I don't know that there's that much of a difference in energy. I think because in Smash, it's all sung by one person for the most part with, like, you know, backup chorus and stuff. But in the show, it is sung by a few different people. Like, they each have solo verses. And I think that just, I don't know if it's just me being like curmudgeon of like, this isn't how it used to be, but it just like felt like it wasn't as high energy as it was in Smash. But
what was the, I don't know, like what happened in Smash with this song?
Well, so in Smash, the story of Smash is they're writing a musical within the show of Marilyn Monroe, and Megan Hilty is like one of the people that plays Marilyn Monroe in their show within a show. And Let's Be Bad is one of the Marilyn Monroe numbers of also basically the prohibition. Like, let's prohibit prohibition is a line from the original song also. Like, they kept maybe, I'd say, 40 to 50% of the lines. So, but they just handed them out to different people. Like, if you say something is taboo, well, that's the thing I want to do. Do it till I'm black and blue. Let's Be Bad. That was directly from the original. So there's a bunch of stuff. It's mostly just all the Mexico stuff that is new. I mean, it was essentially the same thing, just not set in Mexico and more of a vague prohibition speakeasy jazz club song.
When my top is set to blow, then my favorite word is no, because it points the way to go. Let's be bad. If you say something is taboo, well, that's the thing I want to do. Do it.
So then the next song, we travel to Mexico with Daphne and Osgood Fielding. Super like impressive set change. Like, whatever club they're at in Mexico is a bop. Daphne is like just really enjoying herself.
And I think maybe this is the first really subtle sign that Osgood knows Daphne is not all that she has like portrayed herself as. But he is like so in love with her. It's wild. I'm like, all right. And he's just so earnest about it. I think this is where I was like, all right, I get it. We like him. This is fine. So
he like
compares her to a butterfly, talks about all these nice things about like how she can be herself now and spread her wings or whatever. And it's basically like a somewhat main turning point where Daphne realizes that like she is comfortable as Daphne as well as as Jerry.
He is so sweet. He's like, fly Mariposa's butterfly. Fly Mariposa, fly. I would never pin such beauty down. You should be free to touch the sky. So fly Mariposa, fly. He's like, I'll wait for you there till I die. I'm like, wow, that's a that's a statement. And also, don't they get married?
Well, he proposes to her. So he says yes. And then he tells Joe, and Joe's just like, how the fuck is that going to work? And he's like, why can't I say yes? In the original movie, there's like not really like a non-binary element, so I believe Jerry only says yes because he like runs to tell Joe. He's like, we're gonna get married, he's gonna realize I'm a man as soon as we get married, we're gonna get a divorce, and I'm gonna have half of his money, and this is like his main goal.
But yeah, that leads to You Could Have Knocked Me Over with a Feather, which a lot of people really love this song because this is basically Daphne's coming out song about Jerry wanting to live his life as Daphne permanently. And that's great. I just also don't really care for the song and the musicality of it.
I mean, it's another like ballady number. And I do feel like it's second to At the Old Majestic Theater Matinee or whatever, but better than all of the other ones.
I think I'd actually agree with that, though.
It's kind of like an important number, and we all like Daphne, so it's fine.
I think this might be tied with At the Old Majestic for best ballad for me. Which, again... Okay, now I gotta reshuffle my rankings. You know when you like go down rankings and you're like, that was definitely like the top half, and then you realize you put like 80% of things in the top half or something? Like that's where I'm at now, except with the bottom third. And I'm like, okay, maybe I gotta re-examine this.
Now you could knock me over with a feather, 'cause Joe, the lady that I'm loving is me. I love to be Belle of the Ball. I love the shape of this leg. So tails and tuxes fare thee well. Because you can't undo a fall, you can't unscramble an egg. And now that it is chimed, there's no one ringing this bell. You could have knocked me over with a feather. You could have stole the ice from a cube.
When Daphne / Jerry tells Joe is like, that's great, he's a very kind, accepting friend, but he also moves on really quickly. He was just like, what, like, how are you gonna marry him? And then like Jerry / Daphne explains, and then Joe's like, great,
you can figure that out while I figure my shit out.
Yeah, so that's when he sings.
This is where I start to get really confused. Yeah, this is a diegetic number as Joe performs with the band as Josephine. He lied when he said hello. This is actually kind of a funny number. It's basically him being a jilted lover is the premise of the song. And, you know, like, he lied when he said hello. He had a bunch of other girls that he was sleeping with or whatever. That is not. But then he goes into this sort of soliloquy where he's like, I have too many personalities now, like Josephine would do this, but Kip would do this, but Joe would do this, and he's like trying to struggle with what he does.
So I think like he looks so sad because he is, you know, just realizing that he was thinking very short term last night, and he's just like, the right thing to do is run away to Mexico, because I think like maybe they find out that like Spatz Colombo's on the way or something.
Oh, yeah. Well, isn't Sue like friends with Spatz or something? And like Spatz might have also been an investor.
Maybe. Oh, yeah. I think you're right. I think he was an investor for the women's band. So he is just like, first of all, the right thing I need to do for myself and for Jerry is to run to Mexico. But he's also just like, what the fuck do I do? Like, there are so many complications. And that's when he goes into like, this is what Josephine would do and blah, blah, blah. And Josephine is basically your classic, you know, same as Mrs. Doubtfire. The mature grandma who will handle things correctly, because I guess when you play a woman, you realize how to be a decent human being. I don't know. So basically, he's just like, okay, so what I need to do is I need Kip to break it off with Sugar so that like she doesn't keep having hope with literally a fake person. And then as Josephine, I will like tell her who I really am. And then we're going to run away to Mexico. But it starts with like the rest of the girls in the band are like, Josephine, you look so sad. What's going on? So he's just like making it up. So he's just like, oh, I'm so sad because like my lover left me and he lied when he said hello. Like everything.
Wait, okay. I totally thought that was part of the performance. Wasn't this a concert song?
I didn't think so, because between this song and the next one, he like writes to Sugar that Kip's dumping her.
Huh. Okay.
So I thought this was just like in the dressing room.
Man, this, I really thought that I would remember the show more than I did.
So he basically tells his own story, but through the lens of Sugar or another woman he's fucking up. And then he decides what he's going to do. So he does, like, he leaves a letter in Sugar's dressing room or something as Kip breaking it off with her. And that's why right, yeah. She is fucking sad when she goes into her final ballad of the evening.
Well, I just thought it was funny because in this song, he's like, and Sugar can't love a man and never know his real name. And everyone in the audience at this point is like, yes, Joe, that is true. I'm glad you've caught up.
It's like a vaudeville scene. Oh, he's playing a part. He's just a dinosaur Valentino, but
and then we get to Sugar's last solo song, which is Right Up the Storm, which, I mean, the vocals on this are great. I also don't care about this.
I mean, you know, a storm, fucking rain, fog, whatever, compared to a sad love story is just so fucking old. And it is, like you said, like a number that she's actually performing on stage at Hotel de Coronado. Like, it's part of their set. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't like move the plot. There's nothing unique about it the way that like the old Majestic Theater or whatever is, where it like actually kind of tells a story and is specific to her character. Like, this one isn't. It's a sad song and that's it.
This is where I guess it also gets kind of complicated, because there's like multiple parties. This is not on the cast album. But, you know, all their issues have to culminate where Spats is in town again because he, I think, is friends with Sue. Spats sees Josephine and Geraldine, recognizes them as Joe and Jerry. So he's chasing them. I think somewhere in the middle of this, Joe tells Sugar that he's actually Joe, not Josephine, and that he was also maybe actually Kip. So Sugar is mad at him. And then the police are after Spats because, you know, Spats is the mafia. I don't know. A lot of people are chasing a lot of people around, and there are at least three more parties in this chase scene that is happening. Osgood gets involved because he loves Daphne and just wants to be helpful.
What a good guy.
Yeah. Also, it's because it's Osgood's hotel that there's mafia running around in. So maybe he cares about that, too. But it's literally, it's wild. Like, I had heard before the show that everyone loved this chase scene. And I was like, okay, like, you know, whatever. How good can it be? But it's all done in basically kind of tap dancing. And they have movable doors like they're in Monsters, Inc. or something. And all that. And it really is a big, wild number. Like, holy shit, I wonder how long that took to rehearse it, because it was a lot. I feel like it's not a spoiler to say that Spats gets caught, because you kind of just expect that out of this show. Mm-hmm. But it is still, I think people applauded. It's just a very satisfying moment. And then they get to have their finale, which Osgood gets to marry Daphne. Daphne tries to tell him that Daphne is biologically male. Osgood does not give a shit.
It's just like supposedly the most famous line in the movie. I guess it is just for laughs, but it's like low-key woke. I don't know. But this was like so it's the last line in the movie, but Osgood says it. And basically everyone that loved the movie was like, they better not cut this line out of the show because it's such an iconic line. Uh-huh. And they do start the song with it. At the end of the movie, they're actually back in Osgood's yacht. Joe's there, Daphne's there, Sugar is there, and they're running away from the mess that's happening in the hotel, I guess. And Daphne is just like, Osgood, I can't marry you. And he's like, why not? And he says a lot of the same things that Daphne says in the musical. Like, he's like, I smoke so much, I can't have babies. And Osgood is just like, I don't care. And then at one point, this is like kind of funny, just because like we know Sugar can't resist saxophone players, but Daphne tells Osgood, well, I've been living with a saxophone player for the last 3 years, and Osgood is just like, I forgive you. And then Daphne's just like, I don't know what I could possibly tell him at this point. So he rips off his wig and he's like, I'm a man. And then Osgood's just like, well, nobody's perfect. And then the movie just ends. So it's like, Osgood is still down. I can't believe Sugar forgave Joe so easily.
Sugar specifically says, look, you're gonna have to make it up to me. Like, I'm not just gonna go into this relationship with you. Like, she lays down some boundaries, which I appreciated. And I think it's meant to be a time skip between the last number and the rest of the show. So I'm guessing it's like, okay, after they've had some time, then she's okay with it now.
I don't know. If a man pretends to be a screenwriter to hook up with me, and then I find out that he's also role-playing as one of my best friends, yeah, I don't know if any amount of groveling would help.
I mean, to be fair, like, running from the mafia is a better reason than the reasons in Tootsie or Doubtfire.
That's fair. But the Kip thing was just him being a man whore.
Yeah, that was just... All right. But it was also nice because they ended the very end with the repeal of Prohibition. So it added a nice little bookend.
Now who would have thought when we boarded that train that all the lights in Hollywood would spell sugar cane?
Yes, MGM's coming.
The band's made a killing.
And we can still be partners.
Yeah, but who gets top billing?
No more hiding the love we got.
And now the time has come for us to tie the knot.
Then we'll turn up the heat.
Is the show. What a wild ride.
It really was. Even if we didn't remember half of it.
I was shocked that this was a New York Times critics pick. Were you?
No. Because like we said, it's very like old Broadway sensibilities, you know? I think it does do a good mix of old Broadway with some new sensibilities, and obviously the non-binary portion and all that stuff is very modern. But I think I can see people who grew up with like classic Broadway liking this more than something like, you know, Jagged Little Pill, which sort of just throws a lot of woke material at you, because it feels more baked in and it feels more like meeting them on their terms almost.
It's just like the show, like I was saying at the beginning, it doesn't say a whole lot. It mainly just entertains. Like, it's definitely not catering to like
a highbrow Broadway audience in any sense. I don't know. I just thought Jesse Green was snobbier than this. So
I think Jesse Green just likes what he grew up with. Like, I literally think that's it. Like, if you read his review of the Company revival, his main complaint is just that he didn't connect to it as much as he did with the original Company. And I'm like, but that's because you're a man.
He really needs to be replaced. Yeah. Like, for real. Like, he's been doing this too long. I feel like his Cinderella review was so mean. And, like, we just reviewed it. We had a lot of mean things to say about it. But his was, like, purposefully malicious. Like, there was just no reason to be like that. Like, I feel like he just loves to hate. Like, he doesn't even enjoy theater like a normal person anymore. And he's so biased. And I can't believe that the New York Times only has one white man reviewing shows right now. Maybe we should write them a letter. In terms of Tony nominations, I assume we're looking at score and choreo.
And a lot of people really like Jay Harrison Gee for this.
Yeah, like definitely an actor nomination. At
I
least
feel like
one,
they could
right?
both get it, honestly. Jay Harrison Gee is non-binary, chose to be eligible in the leading actor category. I mean, we have maybe Neil Diamond, but I haven't heard people talk about his performance as much as, like, you know, other jukeboxes in the past.
Yeah, like a lot of the shows we've looked at this year, like the three that we've released prior to this one, are all female leads.
Yeah,
so I don't know, well, if it's like a strong male actor leads, year. I feel like they have a good chance.
It would be like Sweeney Todd, Josh Groban, Parade for Ben Platt. I'd say probably Into the Woods for Brian D'Arcy James, maybe Camelot for Andrew Burnup. But yeah, I feel like actually both Christian Borle and Jay Harrison Gee hold a pretty good chance of getting nominations.
It's also just like Juliet, like it's a very high energy, exhaustive role. They're on stage a lot. They're always moving. They're always singing. They're always dancing.
I had a question for you because, so this was obviously like pretty critically acclaimed, and you know, Kimberly Akimbo is definitely the favorite to win the Tony as of now. Between those two, which one did you like better?
I definitely liked this one better at the time, but I would still think that Kimberly Akimbo deserves Best Musical more. Like, I think watching Some Like It Hot with all the big production numbers, like I was saying at the beginning, it's just like 2.5 hours of like a great time, and you like leave the theater smiling. There's nothing necessarily wrong about the show. But I think like Kimberly Akimbo definitely had more to like marinate on. Like, we had so much additional commentary on it when we were talking about it together here. And also, like, I had like a new appreciation after listening to the cast album and everything. So it definitely seems like a little more nuanced and layered, which basically sums up like why I'm shocked this is critically acclaimed, because I feel like it's just as much of a brain dead good time as Anne Juliet is, to be honest. What about you?
Yeah, I would probably agree. I think for rewatch value, I would rather watch Some Like It Hot again, but I do think, like, textually, Kimberly Akimbo is the better show.
Mm-hmm. I think because I know the Kimberly songs so well now, I could almost be convinced to watch it again. Just because I know it so well, and like, it would be fun. But I agree. Like, Some Like It Hot would be a better time. It's just that, like, none of the songs in Some Like It Hot, in my opinion, would, like, ever make it onto our karaoke rotation.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like a song or two from Kimberly Akimbo could, because like there's just more distinctions between the different songs and stuff. So,
that being said, the classic question of what would they perform at the Tonys?
I hope they do Z-Bop.
I agree.
Yeah.
I do still like You Can't Have Me If You Don't Have Him, if they really want to highlight their leading actors. But yeah, I think Z-Bop is probably nominated. The most fun. Yeah. All right, cool. So our next show is K-pop?
Yeah, K-pop.
So stay tuned with us to hear more from the 2023 season as we'll go through the rest. Our next one is going to be K-pop. So definitely subscribe for that, which you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, any other podcast platform that you prefer. And you can also get in contact with us on Twitter or Instagram at bottomlessbway or email us at bottomlessbway@gmail.com. And we will see you guys in 2 weeks.
And when a bloviator prays opinions and doesn't pay a lady what she's owed, then Mr. Z-Pep simply oughta keep bam bam. It's the code to make him hit the road.
Webster's dictionary teaches language so clean,
but Mr. Webster doesn't have the words that we mean.
The music hath the charms to soothe the savage breast,
even when Z-Pep Z-Booyah is what we've expressed.
So when an argument is at its zenith
and you want to curse and say, you dirty rat,
then Mr. Z-Pep Z-Booyah beep bam bam is the classy way to make men scat.
Okay, here's your 200. You dames are crazy, I'm out of here.
When a knucklehead gets too handsy and tries to wrestle me to the floor, I'll tell